Not proud of your undergrad GPA? We're going to discuss what to do about it right now. Welcome to the 137th episode of Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that wonderful moment when you jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in." Before we get into the main topic for today, which is what to do when your undergraduate record is causing you to lose sleep as you contemplate graduate school, I want to invite the MBA wannabes among you to my next webinar, Round 3 or Next Year. I'm going to discuss who should apply Round 3 and who should wait for the next application cycle. The webinar is free, and we'll link to the registration page in the show notes at accepted.com/137. Now to today's topic. I was recently doing some end-of-the-year review and noticed that among our most frequently visited posts and articles are those having to do with concerns about undergrad GPAs. And indeed, when I get phone calls or I'm corresponding with people online, that is a recurring theme, somewhere up with the low test score. But in some respects, I think the undergrad GPA is even a little bit more problematic because people aren't going to go redo their entire 4 years of college. And this concern was consistent across all categories of applicants that accepted services, certainly the graduate applicants. So I thought that my podcast listeners would share these concerns and decide to devote a show to how do you deal with, mitigate, whatever, a low GPA. So we're going to go through the 5 steps to deal with a GPA that is causing you concern. And the 5 A's for your GPA are: 1, assess your GPA. 2, analyze the causes of your low GPA. 3, address your GPA. 4, add context to your GPA. And 5, avoid mistakes in addressing your GPA. And I also have created a cheat sheet so you can really focus on what I'm saying and not have to take notes if you want. And you'll be able to download that at accepted.com/lowGPA, L-O-W-G-P-A. I'll give that URL for you later on also. But again, it's a cheat sheet. It'll summarize pretty much what I'm talking about right now. Not all the details, so stay tuned, but you'll want to get the cheat sheet too. Okay, so let's go through these topics in a little bit more depth. The first one is assess your GPA. That's the first A. Is it really and truly low? Now, I define a low GPA as one that is 0.3 on the US 4.0 scale or more below your target school's average GPA for accepted students. I'm going to repeat that definition. 0.3 on the US 4.0 scale or more below your target school's average GPA for accepted students. This information can usually be found in the posted class profile for many, many programs and sometimes in U.S. news rankings. An alternative definition, which is also very usable and works in my book, is a GPA that is below the target school's 75th or 80th percentile, whichever is available. If you're coming from abroad and you're wondering how your percentage or your first class, second class degrees tend to convert, there are online tools that you can use, WES, ECE, but I would strongly encourage you not to convert it and just to use your general knowledge of how you did. If you're applying to highly competitive programs and realize you had to be at the top of your class, whatever the grading scale. If your grades were good but not top of the class, then you probably are aiming too high and you might indeed have a low GPA. So stay tuned. Let's take a look at either of these definitions and discuss what's good and bad or the limitations of these definitions. On one hand, one thing I like about either of these definitions is that it's relative to the schools that you are targeting. So if you have a 3.3 and the average GPA of the entering class at the program you want to attend is a 3.3 or even a 3.4, not to mention a 3.2 or lower, you do not have a low GPA. You have an average GPA, a competitive GPA. However, don't tune out yet. If you have that same 3.3 and the schools you are aiming for have an average GPA for accepted students of 3.7 plus, as do several medical schools, Stanford Business School, a few law schools, and other graduate programs, then you do indeed have a low GPA, and you should definitely listen in to the rest of the program. What I don't like about this definition, and I'm just going to throw this out there as a caveat for you and warning, Admissions is much about much more than GPA, and we'll get to a little bit of that later on in the program. You cannot look at any one number in a vacuum in admissions and focus exclusively on it. So looking at a low GPA, well, if you have a high test score, maybe, again, gives you a little slack. There's all different ways to look at it, and unfortunately, no definition will account for the fuzzier aspects of admissions. By focusing on the average also with my definition or even the range, you know, the percentile scores, the definition doesn't reflect the impact of trends in your GPA or extenuating circumstances that you were dealing with as you were going through college. My definition also doesn't reflect the impact of diversity and non-academic experience on how schools will view those numbers, as they definitely will take those things into account. And that doesn't reflect how far away you are from that average or how far below you are that below that range. If you're a little bit below and the school perhaps is not as competitive as some of the ones I mentioned a minute ago, then it's less of a problem than if you're a full point below. The elements that are not included in this definition are usually those are the fuzzier aspects of admissions, really. And the flaws in my definition provide opportunity for those of you who may have a low GPA and still want to attend the programs of your dreams. They give you opportunity to show that your GPA doesn't define you. All right, so the first A was assess your GPA. The second A is analyze the causes of your low GPA. And I'm going to give you different reasons for a low GPA in the order of ease of addressing them, with the easiest coming first, okay? So the first fairly common reason for a low GPA is adjustment to college. Did you have a hard time adjusting to college, and did your GPA take a hit your freshman year, but improve every year thereafter, with perhaps you landing on the dean's list for the last 2 years and having a 4.0 your senior year? Well, that's not so bad. That's fairly easy to address. Or did illness or circumstances beyond your control cause a drop in your grades for a specific period of time, perhaps one semester, maybe two semesters or two quarters? Okay, that can be dealt with. Did you declare the wrong major and have poor grades in that major until you realized your true calling? When you started taking classes which you both enjoyed and were talented in, did you excel? Were you working part-time to support yourself or perhaps your family? Or did you have a major sports commitment in order to qualify for an athletic scholarship? That can also be addressed. The hardest one to deal with is the next one. Did you start out strong, maybe earning a 3.9 during your freshman year, but then lost your motivation? Your grades dropped steadily so that your GPA average during your senior year had declined to a 3.0, 3.1. This trend is a red flag, even if your overall GPA is a 3.4 or a 3.5. The causes of your low GPA, as well as how low it is, will influence how you deal with it and how much effort you have to expend to deal with it. And that leads us to the next point, which is the third A for your GPA, addressing your low GPA. The basic goal in addressing your GPA is to show that your undergrad grades aren't an accurate reflection of your ability, to show that you're capable of much, much more than what you did in your college years. And there are two basic steps to make that case and mitigate the impact of your low GPA. The first one is to ace your test, your aptitude test, whether it's the MCAT, the GMAT, the LSAT, the GRE, or whatever. You need a high test score. And a high test score in this case would be one that is above average for the programs you are targeting. Again, it's relative to the schools you are targeting. The test score indicates that you have the raw talent and aptitude for your chosen field. There's been a lot of testing and correlation studies on those test scores and people's performance. Yes, there are differences for different groups, and those will also be taken into consideration. I can't go into them here in this podcast. That's a whole different topic. That's step number one, ace your exam. Two, take classes in your chosen field and earn A's in them. For some of you, that means a few classes. Maybe your GPA is just a little bit low. Maybe there were extenuating circumstances. For pre-meds, it could mean a full post-bac program for academic enhancers. And I'd suggest that you see exhibit.com/82 for our podcast on all things post-bac. For future MBAs, you're going to aim for A's in business-related classes like accounting, economics, calculus, statistics for business, maybe finance one. For law school applicants, you would take a few undergrad law classes or classes that require writing and analysis. Regardless of your degree goal, you want to show that you have the self-discipline, study skills, and motivation to apply yourself and excel in an academic setting related to your chosen field of some study. Now, why do you need both? Why do you need both a high test score and now high grades? Well, first of all, for competitive programs, that's kind of the name of the game. That's, you do need that. But I sometimes like to say that the test score indicates you have the head to succeed, the raw talent, and the grades indicate you have the derriere to succeed. You have the ability to discipline yourself to sit there and study, to perform academically. You need to have both in order to succeed in graduate school. Now, some of you are going to wonder how many classes you should take. Well, that depends on how bad your GPA is, especially your GPA in courses related to your field of study, how much lower it is than the target school's average, as well as how much time has elapsed since you graduated. If there is a big gap between your GPA and your target school's average, you may want to enroll in a master's program or, as I mentioned for pre-healthcare applicants, a formal post-bac program. Realize that even post-bac programs, however, are going to look at your, especially your science GPA, and they're going to want to see something above a 2.5, I think almost across the board. We do have, again, people on staff who are former post-bac program directors. We have Alicia McNeese-Namonkar, who actually wrote a book on post-bac programs. It came out in late 2014. I'll link to that in the show notes at accepted.com/137. If you have put several years of relevant achievement between you and your undergrad performance, you may need fewer classes to assure schools that you've changed, especially if you have that nice, high, shiny GMAT, GRE, LSAT, or MCAS. With a nice high test score and evidence that you can now or recently perform academically, you are well on your way to dealing with that low GPA. The fourth A for your GPA is add context to your low GPA. Schools may still wonder, what happened? Why was the undergrad GPA low? How do I know it won't happen again? And that's a key concern for an admissions officer reviewing and evaluating your application. You need to respond to those concerns proactively. Worried admissions officers tend to vote deny. This is especially true if we're talking about a declining undergrad GPA. So how can you deal with those worries? Factually, give context to the person evaluating your application. That's in a sentence, that's the bottom line. Factually and succinctly, give context to the person evaluating your application. Your goal should be to show that whatever contributed to the poor performance in your past, either it is not a factor in your life anymore, or it's something that you've learned how to deal with so it doesn't affect your performance today. That's your goal. I'm going to repeat that. You want to show that whatever contributed to the performance either is not a factor in your life today or is something that you've learned how to deal with so it doesn't influence your performance. And you can break the causes of or the types of context down into a few categories. First of all, circumstances beyond your control. And by that, I would mean illness, accidents, family problems, things that nobody wanted, nobody sought, and you had absolutely no control over. If these are the factors that contributed to a drop in grades, hopefully they are behind you. Now, what should you do? You need to straightforwardly and simply say what happened and point to evidence that it is behind you or that you've learned to deal. And that's why, again, your performance at work, your performance in recent classes, high test score, all are in line with that. Circumstances, at least partially within your control, another set is another kind of context. This could be poor decisions early in your college career, a bad choice of major, inferior time management and study skills, especially earlier in your career, or the need to work 20 plus hours per week. I'm not sure that that's, again, that's probably partially within your control or mostly out of it, but it's somewhere in there. What should you do about circumstances partially in your control? Take responsibility for the mistakes, if any, and point to evidence like your recent A's and high test scores that you have matured and have developed into a responsible, grounded adult. If you had to work to support yourself or your family, you may not need to apologize or acknowledge mistakes, to the contrary, but do state how many hours per week you worked and try to provide evidence of grades when you weren't working so hard and actually had the time to study, and those grades could be recently taken ones if relevant. The third type of circumstance is a low or declining GPA with no extenuating circumstances. As I said earlier, that's a major red flag. What you should do? Well, you can be happy you didn't have to handle situations like those I mentioned with extenuating circumstances beyond your control, circumstances at least partially within your control. You do have to take responsibility and assure the schools that that behavior is behind you. It won't happen again. You need to have more classes with A's to show that you are now motivated. You may need to discuss what caused the decline in or lack of motivation, but the goal has to be to persuade the admissions reader that those circumstances are behind you. You're a new you. You have your motivation and you have your mojo and you're going to perform. Now, I've harped somewhat on the serious impact of a declining GPA, and that is intentional. Still, I do want to distinguish between a minor fluctuation and a declining GPA. I was recently asked on a forum by someone who had a 3.9 his freshman year, and he was really worried that the remainder of his college career he averaged a 3.8. So his GPA technically declined. That is a fluctuation, not a declining trend. It is an outstanding GPA and not at all a cause for concern. Now, applicants sometimes worry that an explanation, or what I like to call adding context, will sound like whining or it could be defensive. And I think that concern, if you share it, is justified. You don't want to whine or provide excuses. However, providing context just lets the admissions reader understand the environment in which you operated. Perhaps the challenge you faced would make your 3.0 look like a 3.8. You need to give the admissions committee the ability to make that judgment. You also need them to give them reasons, especially if you're talking about a short part of your undergraduate career, to basically look to isolate those grades out and look at the part of your grades when you weren't dealing with whatever you were dealing with. To avoid whining, make or empty excuses, and we'll get a little bit more into that, make your description of the circumstances straightforward, and again, take responsibility for any mistakes and focus on what you've done to show your ability, to show what you're capable of. So 4 is add context. 5. Now, the 4 A's, 1 through 4, were really to-dos. And I'm going to go over them again briefly. Assess your GPA, analyze the causes of your low GPA, address your GPA, and 4, add context to your GPA. The 5th one is really don't do this. Okay? It's avoid these mistakes in handling a low GPA. Now, the biggest mistake is to think that schools don't consider your undergraduate GPA. I guess hope springs eternal, and it's so much easier to wave it away than to deal with it. But that is a big mistake. There is a grain of truth to that assumption for applicants to executive programs, especially executive MBA programs, because applicants to these programs are typically 10 or more years from college graduation. But most of you are applying within 5 years of graduation, and your GPA is the school's window into how you perform academically. It is also something that all graduate applicants will have and is one common means of comparison and a way of the schools seeing how you perform over time. Again, it's one common means of comparison, admittedly an imperfect one because differences in grading scales and courses of study are common, but again, it's something you all have in common. It is a window into you as a student, and schools will use it. The second most common mistake applicants make in adding context to their mediocre performance, they err by proudly proclaiming that they were too busy to study and take their classes seriously. And there are variations on this theme. I'll give you an example. Here, I'm going to pretend to be a student making this claim. I took too many units so that I could finish faster, or I took too many units because I wanted to graduate with 2 bachelor's degrees instead of 1, and I did so in the same period of time. Or here's another one. I enrolled in advanced classes where I didn't have the prerequisites, so I got a C instead of a B+. Or I was so active in extracurricular activities that I didn't have the time for classes and classwork. That's another real good one. Or I was too busy with my startup to attend class and do my homework or study. The key failing in all of these excuses, and these are excuses, is that there is no acknowledgement of or taking responsibility for a mistake, poor time management, or bad decisions. Bad judgment. You did it this way and are happy you made those choices and would make them again. While you get an A for honesty, your reasoning will basically tell the admissions committee that you are likely to exhibit the same behavior in graduate school. And your candor will not warm the heart of an admissions reader. They want to know that you're going to perform, that you're going to be committed, involved, and that you're going to care about your grades and your classwork and studying. Don't provide those excuses. And frankly, if you think of those excuses, I would suggest that you reevaluate your reasoning because I would say that grad school doesn't make a lot of sense. Now, the next point I'm going to make is not one of my A's for your GPA, but I have to close on this note. A successful application to a competitive graduate program is not just about ameliorating weaknesses or a low GPA or a low test score. And I've had applicants, I've talked to applicants, and I'm thinking of one in particular who called me up several months ago. He was concerned about his undergraduate GPA, but he had a very high GMAT score, and I think a 740 GMAT. And all he wanted to do was argue with me about how he should address his GPA, which wasn't all that bad as I recall. And I told him, look, you're focusing so much on your GPA, you pretty much addressed it with what he had done, his test score. I said, but you also have to give them positive reasons to accept you. And he just did not want to hear that point. And a few months later, he called again because he'd gotten rejected and he wanted a rejection review. Don't make the same mistake. You must provide schools, especially competitive programs, with positive reasons to accept you. You can't just focus exclusively on mitigating the negatives. Yes, you have to do that, but don't ignore the need to give them good reasons, positive reasons to accept you. Don't make the same mistake as that fellow I spoke with a few months ago. Now, I've mentioned a lot of different resources. I want to mention again that we have a cheat sheet we've prepared for this particular show. It's at exhibit.com/lowGPA. I also mentioned a few resources for pre-meds, and we have some for pre-MBAs. We have, in general, a lot of resources on our site for those dealing with low GPAs, and you will find them at www.exhibit.com/137. And again, if you are an MBA trying to decide between a round 3 application or waiting until round 1 of next year, I invite you to come to the webinar where I will discuss exactly that question. We will link to that page at www.exhibit.com/137. Listener, thank you for joining me for this, our 137th episode. I hope you found the show worthwhile. I also want to encourage you, if you have questions about your GPA and the specifics of your situation, you can leave a comment on the blog at exhibit.com/137. Finally, if you find the show worthwhile, you found this particular episode worthwhile, and have friends with less than stellar undergraduate records who may benefit from this show, please feel free to tell them about it or leave a review on iTunes. Again, the link to the show, which you can share with your friends, is exhibit.com/137. And we link from there to iTunes, which makes it easy for you to either subscribe or leave that review. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.